The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. All discussion is limited to publicly available information and should not be interpreted as legal, professional, or financial advice. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license nor provide any financial services. Before making investment decisions, you should obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor.
Hello, my name's James Wrigley. I'm a financial advisor and one of the principals of Melbourne-based financial planning firm First Financial. I've been a long-term listener and contributor to the Ensemble Group and podcast, picking up some amazing nuggets of gold over the years. And through this podcast and the people that I'm able to speak to and interview, hopefully I can continue to deliver some of those nuggets of gold to you.
Ascender believes underwriting shouldn't slow down the advice process. With their industry-first digital PMARs, doctors complete smart online questionnaires that flow straight into Ascender's underwriting rules engine. Automated decisioning reduces friction and speeds up the approval process to help keep your business moving. On average, advisors are seeing 10-day faster decision times. It's a simpler, smarter way to write business and secure cover for your clients sooner. Visit ascender.com.au or call 136522.
Hello, welcome back to the podcast. I'm joined today by Izzy Titor from Henry Advisory. Izzy, thank you for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, James. Pleasure to be on the potty.
And I said thanks to you before we pressed record, but thanks for your patience in the last couple of weeks of trying to get this time in. I've kind of bailed on you a couple of times there, but appreciate you coming on. Now, I came across you and your business partner just a few weeks ago. You'd had this announcement on LinkedIn to say your business starting and so forth. So tell us, Henry Advisory. I'm surprised no one's already using the name Henry, but we'll get into what does the name Henry even mean? Congrats. So how long are the doors been open for?
Yeah, so we've only been open for, well, we were licensed on the 19th of last month. Probably thinking about it the last 3-6 months in planning and licenses, and we've had a lot of joy and even before we started the business in that area, but everything sort of happens for a reason, and it was probably a blessing of a few of those things and sort of challenged us. But when we were first looking at the business, I could not believe that Henry Advisory, or just Henry, wasn't used. And to be completely blunt with you, when I was thinking about, like, what are my clients? Who do I want to service? There's actually a Reddit page called Oz Henry. Yeah. And there's 40,000 budding young financial advisors that aren't really qualified on there, just, you know, doing their best. And I actually look at that page, and that was a big inspiration, because I just thought, if you were an advisory firm and this was your lead or your customer base, or these were your clients,
yeah,
you would have such a successful business.
Yeah.
Just the amount and just the amount of people posting on it.
You just need a small fraction of that 40,000 that are posting in that group.
Yeah, yeah. And to be fair, like, the advice that they give on there, a lot of it's really good. I'm quite surprised. A lot of it is terrible. And that's where I sort of look at that, and it's a bit of a pain and sort of the part of the mission of what we're trying to do here. But with Henry's, like, high earners that don't feel rich yet, why is it in the Australian landscape that they just don't want to get advice? Well, they're not willing to pay the advice when, you know, they're on $250,000, $300,000, $500,000, $1 million plus.
Big incomes, isn't it? So what got you into this space? We're trying to, let's start with, what does Henry stand for? And you briefly just mentioned it there, but what does Henry stand for?
Yeah, so the acronym stands for High Earner, Not Rich Yet. The way that we look at it in terms of our business is, we don't tell people how much is a high earner. I've got friends that live in regional New South Wales. They're so much more wealthier than my friends here in Brisbane, and vice versa, but they might be on lesser income. So it's really, the way we look at it is, if you feel like you've got high incomes for where you live and for what you're doing, and, you know, you don't feel rich yet, that they're the sort of people we want to work with. And then in terms of rich, I mean, I'm on the journey at the moment, but I personally, like, I was a Henry, and I sort of did the math and, you know, was going to do pretty well financially. I sort of knew that early on, but do I feel rich yet? Not at all. And as I sort of got older, I'm 29, turning 30 this year, I kind of realized that I could earn double the amount I was earning, but it was actually my lifestyle and, you know, being able to one day be with my kids and all that sort of stuff. That really, to me, was what was going to make me feel rich.
Yep.
And I feel like that's the over, you know, people are buying investment properties, they're doing this, they're doing that, but really it's they want the lifestyle.
Mm.
That's what they want to feel.
And is that part of your like initial engagement and initial conversations with new clients around this? What's their definition of a high earner? And you said it's kind of relative to the life you're living and where you live and so forth. And then what does rich mean to them? Like, do you put it that bluntly to them? What does rich mean to you or something to that effect?
Yeah, certainly. Straight away. Like, what makes you feel rich? I know it's a bit of wordplay and you can go a bit crazy with this stuff, but I feel like goals and objectives, you get the same thing over and over again. Want to build wealth, want to retire early, all that sort of stuff. And I'm probably not the best at it. I'm not life coachy enough, but I think asking people, what makes you feel rich? And just circling them back to that question, it really helps me build a great plan. Yesterday was a great example of that. We ended up starting with a self-managed super fund, a family trust to do trust lending to buy a home. And we walked away deciding that we're going to sell an investment property and have a 12-month sabbatical. What a completely different, I don't think that's how it was meant to go, but I know that family and those people, they're going to be fine long-term and now they're going to have the life they want as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So what got you into this kind of particular space of advice? You know, there's people that work with retirees and pre-retirees and all these different segments of the market. What attracted you to this particular demographic of clients?
I think being my age now, when I first come through, and it is thanks, I'll give a shout out to the FPA back in the day and all that sort of stuff. But when I came through, I was like one of the student congress people that they would, you know, invite. And, you know, being a young person, my first firm that I worked with was, we weren't even at SMAs yet. Like, we were ultra high net worth firms. You know, I was there and we're doing the trades and the strategic advice and really like such a great opportunity so young in my career. But, you know, just at that age, it didn't really feel like me. You know, I'm 23 and we're advising sometimes on $30 million business transactions or, you know, restructures. And it was sort of like, I couldn't touch it, you know, and I sort of got into financial advice. I think mainly just my background, like we didn't grow up with a lot of money. My family gave me everything else, but it just didn't really resonate with me. An extra 1 or 2% for someone on, you know, $6 million in retirement. Plenty of guys can look after that. And if your heart's not in it, well then, you know, someone like yourself, like, you know, your heart's definitely in it, you know, I'm not the right person. I'm not going to be able to perform my best. And then the last firm that I worked at, I think they sort of started around 2010, 2012, and, you know, what a business they are. And I think that they really were on the right track with what they were doing. They were very early on the property game. They were conflict-free. They weren't sort of pushing people into property and then getting referral fees. They didn't really get dirty revenue. And when I joined that firm, I just loved that type of advice, working with people my own age.
Ensemble Progress is for advisors who want real momentum, not just inspiration. Find out more at ensemble.com/membership.
And then I think around Henry in particular, to be a bit selfish, I was a Henry, you know, I was probably on track to make 220 grand, you know, this financial year. And, you know, it was great. And definitely 4 years ago when I started, you know, building into advice, I thought, man, this is fantastic. I'm going to be so happy in 4 years. And after 4 years, I just found that was completely opposite. The money just wasn't aligning with, you know, how I want to live my life.
Mm. It's interesting you say that. You know, there's different things that I've read along the way, and money is a bit of a motivator of people, but it's not the be all and end all. It's kind of like a bit of like this sugar hit for people that are, you know, chasing a few extra dollars. You earn a few extra dollars, it's nice for a little while, but then you get paid that amount once or twice, and you're like, oh well, this is just normal now, and you're kind of then constantly chasing something. It sounds like you were kind of looking for something. Something more. So how did you, late 20s now, but you know, you've had a pretty stellar career up until now, by the sounds of things, at the businesses that you've been in and the stuff that you've been involved in, probably the envy of a lot of late 20 somethings in financial advice. How do you, like, where along that journey does it come to your mind that you want to start your own business?
Yeah, I think I actually, I'm a very good Robin. I'm not a great Batman. I really would love to, if someone had what I wanted to do, I would love to leech off them and be an employee and maybe have a bit of equity in that business. But I sort of started the journey. I interviewed at one firm. I walked away from it straight away and I just went like, this is not what I want to do. And I just didn't feel like there was anything in the market at the moment in this space. Oh, that's probably a bit unfair. I know like probably Pivot Wealth is a great example, Fox and Hare. These are the guys I really look up to as well in the industry. And I just think what they're doing is so neat. What I kept running up against is Oz Henry on Reddit and seeing clients, and I'll do this great initial session with them, and they would see the ongoing fee, because that's what every business wants, right? It's, we need the ongoing fee, and commercially that's how it works. And high earners, although earn a lot of money, and you could say, you know, well, they need to value the service and you need to value it. There's just, the market is so saturated at the moment with mortgage brokers and buyer's agents that are filling this market, and they're really compelling in their sales. You know, you've got 90 minutes to convince someone and try and be responsible, and you've got all these things that you can't say, and you're going up against a guy that's going, buy three properties, and, you know, really preying on, you know, Australians want a fair go and they love property. And that's why you're seeing the proliferation of this. And so I thought, if we're going to start our own advisory, part of my mission is, I don't want to see these guys in 3-5 years when it sort of goes bad. You know, I want them to avoid, one of the biggest things with accumulators is avoiding mistakes. And so the way that we sort of, with Henry, is we really want it to be strategy led. I know a lot of people say that, but I'm happy to go on record and say, you know, we're not really going to use, you know, advisor supported funds for super. If people are 30 to 35 and they've got 100 to 300K, you know, industry super funds, as much as people, there's a lot of issues with them, don't get me wrong, but if we can keep the fees down on the advisor side and the administration down on the advisor side, instead of doing 15 minutes of rebalances, maybe I can do a 15-minute call to the client instead every you know, 12 weeks or whatever it may be. And I think Gen Z in particular, they're who we're really working with as a generation. They worry about money more than anyone else. They've got access to Vanguard apps. There's so much, you know, yourself, like you've got so much information out there. Really, I feel like, you know, the SMA, SMAs, and except for if it's for investment with debt recycling, but I just felt like we could really cut down the work on our side and really focus on what's important to the client. And that's strategy. That's helping them not buy the investment property now while the kids are about to go into childcare and they're going to spend 40 grand a year. But hey, what about in 3-5 years when that childcare subsidy money sort of comes down? And I think that's actually, in this generation, is actually, it's quite sexy at the moment to be frugal. British Vogue ran a story last year, which is a luxury magazine.
Yeah.
The story they ran with was a story called Frugal Chic. And what frugal chic is, we want to be chic. We want to, you know, live a good lifestyle. We want to have a high quality life, but we also want to make intentional decisions. And I think right now with traditional advisory firms, I don't think 80% of them really are going that way, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. So when did the light bulb go off? Okay, that, you know, you've interviewed somewhere, you're looking around, this thing doesn't quite exist in the mold that you're describing. Like, was it just last year that you decided you wanted to do your own thing, or has it been burning inside you for a little while?
I think it was burning for a while. I just didn't know.
Yeah.
And then there was, funny enough, someone said to me, and she's very well known in the industry, and she actually said to me probably 12 months before, you need to do your own thing. Like, she knew it. I just didn't know it at that point. And I think, as I said, you know, with the few of the people and that I really look up to, I just think going onto LinkedIn and just seeing what they're doing and the support that they're providing these people, I was just sort of thought, well, I'm really not going to give too much more to the retiree space. I'm not. There's so many great people in that space. There's probably 13,000-14,000 advisors in Australia. In terms of how many are operating in this space and doing it with the business model that we're doing, like, you know, in between the traditional advisor and your mortgage brokers and property agent, I kind of thought about it, and like, there's maybe 1,000.
Yeah.
if that. And so I just thought, well, it resonates with me. You know, I think this might be a winner.
Yeah, and I think you find a lot of advisors throughout their career, they tend to work with people that are like a few years older than them and a few years younger than them too. You know, it's that life experience of that, you know, that shared experience of, you know, whether you're, you know, young and starting a family, or, you know, you're buying your house, and, you know, you can kind of talk about what you've done, what they're doing, and kind of help them through. Just kind of naturally happens. Certainly I know that in my career, in my 30s, a lot of my newer clients looked up around that, and, you know, I'm early 40s now, and lo and behold, there's a lot of people that I'm talking to that are kind of early 40s and going through some of the same life stages that I am.
Yeah, I think you're right, to be honest. And probably one thing I should add is, like, we also do a lot of work in the veteran space as well.
Yeah. Right.
Which is quite unique. And we see a lot now through sort of just my name sort of doing it the last 2 years. And probably the other reason with Henry is that service also really is quite good with an ADF member. You know, with an ADF member, they go to a traditional firm. What's the traditional firm going to do? You can't put them in insurance. You can't take their super, unless ADF super, but even why would you do it, sort of thing. And so, you know, there's a lot of veteran advisors out there that would say, you know, we cater to these guys, but there wasn't really much service that they could provide them. And, you know, through my experience and being able to work and be quite quick and sort of work with them on their property strategies and that sort of stuff, I sort of found that just that approach for that market as well. And there's an argument that, you know, a private in the military, you know, they might be on NAIT at 98,000, but in the real world, it's more like 140, 150 because their rent and all that sort of stuff gets subsidized.
All the benefits that they get. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's also this fee structure and how we do that as well also allows us to hit markets that probably previously didn't get a lot of love, or there's a lot of sort of, hey, we'll talk to you. But once they realize there's no lump sum coming through for a few years, it's a bit like, oh, well, we can't do anything. And what left a bad taste in my mouth is, where does an ADF member go from there? If they're being told a traditional firm can't provide them advice, they go straight to a buyer's agent and buy six houses in Darwin and Townsville and call it a financial strategy. Then they get out, like a lot of them have spoken to me and gone, I don't think that was really the right decision, you know, 5 years ago. And you're like, it wasn't, but we're here now.
Let's fix it now. So you've got a business partner as well?
Yep. So Sam, she's also an advisor. She's on advising within the firm. She's fantastic in the back office. And one of the things that we've been quite intentional about with the business is back office support and having all of our workflows and all of our automations and everything done early, because, you know, we think with the demand that we're getting, we're going to have to find the right person quickly. And how we do that, we need to work it out. But we really want, Ben Nash does he actually wrote a thing and it really resonated with me. And he said, advisors want to feel useful. They don't want to be going through sending off a request that goes to here, that then goes to a faceless paraplanner that then comes back to you, and managing that. What as an advisor, I definitely want to feel like is, I like going on a drive with a buyer's agent. Show me Brisbane right now. Like, what am I modeling? And is that actually looking out here? You know, does that make sense? We naturally do it. I mean, everyone gets invited to investment stuff, but, you know, also doing the buyer's agent stuff, talking to mortgage brokers. So we really want the back office to be really efficient. We're using PlutoSoft. I've found that as a small business, it was a really good decision. It was a bit of a daunting decision, but we're really happy with that. And so Sam looks after all that sort of side of the business. It's a bit of an early investment for us for when people sort of join us.
Yeah. And so she was an advisor, but she's not advising now, or she is registered as an advisor?
No. So she's given up her AR, I guess you could say. So she's probably going to move more to a back office. Yeah. Who knows if she'll come back. She's very passionate about process and workflows. And right now she's redesigning the website and she's a gun at it. So I think for the most part, she'll sort of, for her life, that'll really fit her.
Yeah, nice.
But would love to have her advising again.
Yep. So what does the business look like in terms of people just now? Is it just you and Sam?
Yep, just Sam and I.
I would have thought so, given you only, you know, only just opened the doors not too long ago.
Yeah, so it's just Sam and I. The advice we always get is stay as lean as long as possible, which makes a lot of sense. But I think probably the unique thing we've done is that I'm the only income earner and she's doing the back office. A lot of the time you see it where both people are the advisor and do it. I would say if you're considering it, I think this has worked out very well for us. We're quiet. We've got our silos. We can throw everything at it early on. And with PlutoSoft, I sound like this is a paid ad. It's not. But for a small business like us, it literally is the third person working in the business. It's so quick. I can do it. It's really good.
Yeah. I want to kind of work through what is your engagement look like with these Henrys, and maybe let's start with how are the clients finding you in the first place? Because you've mentioned a couple of times through there that there's a lot of people reaching out to you. Where are they coming from in the first place?
Yeah. So right now we are working on our marketing. We just want to give it 6 months to work out who we are before we start sort of going through there. But we get a lot of business from DVA. So we got a really good relationship there. We get a lot through social media as well. And then at the moment, really working with mortgage brokers, accounting, and those likes. With mortgage broking, I don't know what I've always found with mortgage brokers is that a lot of the ones that I know that are quite successful, they just don't value the financial advice because they just think it's too expensive.
Yeah.
To be completely honest with you, particularly I'm in Brisbane, so we're very quickly becoming one of the most unaffordable cities in the world. So with our business model and making it very project-based, that's winning us a lot of business with brokers because what it actually seems like to them is that they refer us a client. We do our 90-minute session. We can get the advice out very quickly because it's not product-based. It's strategy. We essentially do all the work for them, and they're not really adept at doing a lot of these calculations and advice.
Yep.
And then we're able to charge a one-off fee and then shoot them straight back to them. And we just make it a really important part that, well, we'll go through the ongoing support in a little bit, but sort of framing us that we work with the mortgage brokers and accounting that we are. If you send me a client, the only one thing you have to be clear about is that obviously a mortgage broker, the first thing they say is, well, what do you think about property? We love it, but we do buy in blue chip areas. And so if we don't really like people going to Bundaberg and to, you know, even Perth, to be honest with you. So if you are going to buy a property, I've just got to be upfront with the mortgage broker and say, like, listen, if they can only borrow 700, I would rather wait 2 or 3 years, even with prices going up the way they are, than to get in a subpar property, which the tide is rising at the moment and all boats are lifting, but you know, that tide will go out and I don't want to have that risk over the client. And so really working through that with the relationships. And then the other one would probably be accountants. And with our accountants, we're a little bit different as well, that we do limited advice with accountants.
Okay.
Because the accountants we work with, this, you know how sometimes you have accountants and they're like, in their service proposition, they do all of this stuff, but you just know that you talk to the clients and they're, what they say they're providing and what's actually happening is like two different things. Yes. And then you then have this awkward thing where then you're trying to build in your service and then you have this like Venn diagram of all the things that you both say that you're charging, but neither of you are doing it very well.
Yep.
The accountants that we partner with, we really want to make sure that they actually are doing, like if you're going to say to that family, we're doing like, we're a bit of a family office, where like, we're going to do this, we're going to help you with your mortgage broking and, you know, they really control that relationship, then I'm happy to partner with them. If they've got a bucket company strategy and they need investment advice, I will only provide advice on that. But I'm just not going to sit there and sort of try and pretend that we're both driving this client forward.
Yeah.
So where the accountant is really got the relationship and driving that relationship and actually getting them good results, and they're focusing more on the business at this point, we would do one-off advice to get everything sort of up to foundation level. will sort of get sorted. And then from there, we will be very particular about what is the service that we're actually going to provide them. And so I feel like sort of cutting up our service and quoting at, well, charging our fees at the point of highest impact is winning us a lot of business. People are happy to pay it. And then the other thing with our ongoing is we're very clear to the client, what do you get from an ongoing? And that is what we call our flow pricing. And that is, it's a bit of an ethical dilemma. I've definitely had clients where I'm like, I don't know if they need ongoing service. And then for 3 years, you do nothing. But then on the third year, that something comes out of the blue and you go, oh, wow, like this is why you needed ongoing service.
Yeah.
I would always feel a little bit guilty for the 3 years that we sort of charge the entire client base that might only help 20 to 30%. So what we're trying to do with the business, and this, it's a new business, so I'm happy to come back on in 12 months and say, guys, it doesn't work. But one thing we're definitely going to try is our flow pricing. So quote, high upfront project-based work. And then from there, a low ongoing fee, more financial coaching, your super, your insurance. If we have to do your investment debt recycling, of course, there's going to be more of a fair dinkum ongoing fee there.
Yep.
But the flow pricing is really to be a member of Henry Advisory. And then if something comes up in 3 years' time, the cost to re-engage is going to be a lot lower because we've got up-to-date information, we've got all your stuff. And that's probably something a little bit more interesting about us, but the accounting says it will work, but we'll see. That's a bit of a risk on our side.
So it's like in practice. So what is your engagement then look like with a new client? Are you doing a 90-minute meeting and then you can do some advice afterwards? Like what is your talk me through what engagement looks like?
90-minute meeting, and then we sort of run through everything. With Pluto Soft, we do a little bit of modeling and that sort of stuff up top. I've heard like a lot of your guests recently before sort of preparing. When do you do like the fact find?
Yeah.
At the moment, we are letting the client do it. But then if it's not done 24 hours, I just give them a call and we do it together. I personally think down the track, we will call the client and just do it with them.
Yeah.
So that in that first session, we are like very much ready to go. It'll help with the modeling as well. And then from there, to be honest, we're trying to push up our conversion rate because we're not going for the ongoing dollar.
Yeah.
We need to be signing at a pretty high clip at the initial session. But a lot, we're comfortable just to have a good experience. If we can get the volume like we're getting now, a good experience, that karma will always sort of come back to us. But essentially, goals, strategy, modeling via PlutoSoft, from there, that'll give them like a pretty good, we'll take the 8 things in their mind and cut it down to 2 or 3. Then we go to a strategy sort of session, and then we can share that to them on PlutoSoft or just download it, put it into a document. And then from there, we are going into statement of advice to finalize it.
Yeah.
The thing I would say though is that the letter of engagement is getting signed all the way back at the first session. At the moment, it's something that I'm not happy with. It's probably just habit, is we're charging like a lower commitment fee and then the upfront.
When you're going through the advice presentation, and you've got your
strategy doc.
Okay.
So I'll explain that because that was a bit confusing. So commitment fee says, yep, we'll pay you 25% of the fee now. And then once we get the strategy, once we get them locked in there, because there's not a lot of product. So like, if we just give them the advice doc, they'll look at it and go, well, we've given you all the answers.
They can take the strategy and just go and do it themselves.
Yeah. It's not like a traditional firm where it's like, well, you could do it, but like you don't have Hub 24. You don't like all that stuff. So because we're strategy, we certainly need to charge eventually once we have trust and we're not just not like 3 weeks old. It definitely needs to be that in that first session, value is clearly articulated. We will do the strategy advice and the full fee is charged up at that point. The only question at statement of advice time is whether or not you want ongoing financial coaching.
Okay. And what like, share as much or as little as you like, but you're talking about kind of higher fees and then lower fees. Like, what's a typical fee that you're charging for this kind of project type work that you're doing?
Yeah. So Get Sorted is straight away $4,400 for a single. With, if it's a couple and it's Get Sorted, so we're thinking super, insurance, blueprint to their first property, or we're buying their first property, but we just need to wait for the equity 1 or 2 years, or, well, 2 years at the moment, but down the track, it'll be back to, you know, your normal 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
The way we're charging that is that 4,466. The price is going to come on the page. So by the time this gets uploaded up, your listeners will be able to have a look.
Yeah.
Or your like building wealth people, employee share schemes, debt recycling, you sort of all that sort of jazz. Minimum fee is going to be about $6,800 for a single.
Yeah.
And then for a couple, it's about like $9,500,
yeah,
something like that. Obviously, with the building wealth people, you are certainly then going to be charging a bit more than the financial coaching sort of ongoing fee, because employee share schemes, you know how it sort of works.
Yeah.
There's a lot more hands-on. And then we've got like your CFO sort of service, which is your $10,000 plus. That's your family trust, self-managed super funds, like the whole sort of kit and caboodle. But that's where our fees sort of work out on. In terms of ongoing fees, this is probably, there's going to be a lot of people that will go, good luck scaling it. And it's probably fair. We've done the numbers. We know what we have to get to and what we need to sign. But ongoing fees for like a built, like a Get Sorted, because we're really not doing a lot, it's going to be kind of quite set up to the point where the client could leave us and we're not really having to sell anything down for them. You're probably looking at $2,000.
Yep. It's more like ongoing, a membership fee, like you said before.
Yeah.
Yep.
The building wealth guys, obviously, we're going to get a little bit higher than that. We do work with a lot of people where they are ADF members, they're in PSS, they're in CSS, all that sort of stuff. So we will reduce fees if we're not, if the super is like, we can't even do anything with it, but you're building wealth sort of ongoing fee for a single is probably like your three and a half.
Yeah. As you said, you're only a few weeks in and you just try it and see how it goes. You know, you go into it saying this is the way that we would like to deliver advice, and maybe it works, maybe it doesn't, you know, then that's going to be true for every way of how do you engage a client in an initial and then ongoing support.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, at the end of the day, we would, you know, personally me, like I would love for, and I think as a financial, you know, if I'm speaking on the podcast of financial advisors, we are losing so many clients to buyer's agents and property investors and mortgage brokers. And, you know, we go to Congress and we go to all these events and we say, oh, like, you know, they're giving bad advice and, you know, they, you know, all these barriers, and we sort of stamp our feet. And I understand I've started a business to really, that allows me to do this. But I think people out there, you know, people want advice, but at the moment there just needs to be a few updates to the fee structures and where it is that you're providing value. I know for a fact that with anyone under $500,000 in super, once I put on my fee to administrate it and, you know, do all that stuff, the 35-year-old tech professional is not getting not a basis point of benefit out of it. So why don't we just make sure they're in the correct risk profile? Tactical asset allocation gives you 80% of your returns anyways. We'll just take that. And I just think we'll make a lot better. The client will make a lot less mistakes and make a lot more money on the strategy side.
Yep. What went into starting the business? Like, can you talk us through your last 6 months or so? So you authorized middle of January or so. But what went through? What was involved in you getting prepared to, and Sam getting prepared to launch the business? Obviously, you had to leave wherever you were working before, but what did the last 6 months, 12 months or whatever look like for you in getting ready?
Heaps. And for me personally, it was just like a bit obsessive, but it was just like, you get excited. You get all these little wins when you start to think about it. I can remember sort of thinking to myself, probably the mortgage broker friends, talking to all these people, and they're like, Like, why don't you refer business? Or why isn't as much as I think it should be? We financial advisors get great, like fantastic results for people. Last week, I got an ADF member, never seen a financial advisor. I saved him he's going to get $160,000 tax refund. Like, we just need more access, yeah. Essentially. So the last sort of 3 to 6 months leading up to last year was really just like listening to my friends who are 30 years old. That thing I spoke about, Frugal Chic from British Vogue, that was from my partner. She has no idea about financial advice.
Yeah.
But you listen to her about what are her barriers to advice. And she's just like, I'm not spending $4,000 a year ongoing. She goes like, I'll keep it in my pocket and I'll have a crack. And if I make a mistake, I'll make a mistake. Like that's where people are at. And so the thing that I found was really that Oz Henry Reddit sort of chat. Obviously at the same time too, from a personal level, it really resonated with me, a lot of the things that they were saying on there. But the advice on there was poor. Sorry to the Reddit. I know there'll be maybe some people listening, but the advice they were getting was really poor. And I just thought to myself, if I just got 60 to 90 minutes with these people, I know they would love financial advice, because the way that we sort of provide advice and the way it's been taught to me, like 8 out of 10 appointments, people just walk out. They've got 10 things in their mind. And you've got 30-year-olds saying, like, I need to be putting more money into super. And it's like, well, your super, if you're on like $200,000 a year, like super is the ninth wonder of the world. Like you're probably going to get to your goals retirement-wise doing nothing.
That's it.
But your big issue is houses, where you want to live. So let's throw the kitchen sink at that first. And they just, at the end of the session, they just perk up a bit because they're fighting the enemy on 8 different sides. Now the games to their the rules to their financial freedom are quite clear. There's a pattern.
I've had that conversation with a couple of people recently. You're sitting in front of someone younger that's earning, you know, big dollars, and so, well, provided you remain fit and healthy and you keep working, yes, all of those kind of things, but 60-plus-year-old you is going to be okay because you've got so much in super. You know, you're doing nothing and you're maxing your concessional contributions. You get a decent return. Chuck that into a compound growth calculator. 60-plus-year-old you, you're going to be okay. Sure, you could probably have more money if you did a few things, but without doing anything, you're going to be okay. And it's kind of that next 10 to 15 years. That's the bit that we need to nail, because, you know, 20, 25 years down the line, you're going to be fine. So,
yeah.
A good one.
And essentially, like, that experience, they leave so much less stress. They feel a little bit more empowered because everyone's just getting pounded by news.com every day going, the world's less worth, you know, 50% less. It's just like, there's so much information. There's so much negative news that a lot of my Henrys, they're going to be fine 60 plus.
Yeah.
Their only issue is the house. And then when they want to have kids, and do we buy the investment property first or after, or debt recycle because we don't have the cash flow? And it's actually quite simple advice. And even if they do that first session and they leave and they don't do anything and they don't even engage me, at least they're not doing something that could cost them a lot of money. And they will then speak to another person. This is typically, I probably should have said the other day before, it's word of mouth. There's not many people in this space doing it the way that we do. And so to get back to your question around sort of what was the lead up, we just sort of took that because we sort of knew we were onto something.
Yeah.
And then we just stripped away all the things that we didn't think were important that we couldn't provide a value in. And from there, in terms of setting up the business, it was quite simple, to be honest with you. We went to an accountant. We got the structures set up. We went to a few different licensees. We ended up with Templestone. We just like the way that they did business. They don't charge an ongoing revenue share. So it's a little bit, maybe it's a little bit higher or slightly above average AR fee, but there was no ongoing revenue share. So for me, I just went, well, perfect. Let's go with that.
Yeah.
And then we sort of set it up. Probably the biggest thing setting up a business that you've just got to be prepared for is our first week was that LinkedIn post got like 36,000 profile views. It was like a little bit overwhelming.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know if that's great or good or exceptional, but
that's huge.
It got like so many views. We had so many people reach out from that LinkedIn post, like, we want to be clients. This is really compelling. So the first week we were like, we had a fair few meetings, like five appointments.
Mm.
The next week after that, it like dropped off. And then this week is four appointments this week. And so you just got to be ready for the ebbs and flows, but the ebbs are quite good. Today I learned how to do a carousel Instagram post. That only took me 2 hours on Canva. So yeah, if you like learning and you know, you really want to get your hands dirty and then it's I would never regret the decision I've made. It's been such a good decision.
Yeah. Well, Izzy, thank you for joining me for the podcast. Congratulations to both you and Sam on jumping out and doing your own thing, tackling that Henry market. Look, it would be great to have you back on in a year's time and just see there's been a few people where I've done that, then check in a year's later to say, you know, what's changed, what worked, what didn't work.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us and good luck on the business.
No worries. Thank you. And thanks for having me to the podcast. I didn't mention it, but you know, Glenn from Fox and Hare and Pivot and yourself, these have been great people to look up to quietly in the background. So thank you for what you guys do for the industry as well. And yeah, really appreciate it.
Thanks, Izzy.